Hi, it's Mountain Edition. All the news from the week here in the Roaring Fork Valley coming at you in the next half hour. I'm Kristen Kay here with Elizabeth Stewart Severy. Elizabeth, our listeners might have missed you last week because you were in Marfa, Texas, of all places.
Yeah, I was at a workshop learning a lot about radio and spending some time in the desert. It is good to be back in the mountains, even if they feel a little deserty right now, too.
Well, I'm just thrilled to have you back to talk about all the week's news. The meager early season snow that you just mentioned could spell trouble for avalanches in the backcountry later on this spring, and Challenge America is hosting its first ever military ski league.
And there are local businesses who are losers, and some who are actually winners because of the Bear Mountains.
People might have their rock skis out on the hill, but here on Mountain Edition, nothing but smooth sailing up ahead. The biggest stories from this week coming up. So, as we mentioned, you spent some time in West Texas at a workshop hosted by a public media company called Transom. Mm-hmm. Tell us what you were doing there.
Yeah, well, Transom runs week-long workshops across the country, and the task that I was given before I left home was to find someone interesting in Marfa to tell a story about while I was there for the week. And I stumbled upon this guy with a big, unique dream. Ricky Taylor walks me through his property, 25 acres in the middle of the Chihuahuan Desert. It's about 20 miles north of Marfa, tucked up against the Davis Mountains. The land is dry and windy and covered in spiky plants.
There are many, many prickly things. These are called bear grass. Prickly pear cactus here. This is a choya. Those are the worst to get zapped by. My favorite. This is silver leaf nightshade. I think it's poisonous though.
But looking out over his land from the top of a hill, Ricky has a vastly different vision. This is the future home of Alta Marfa, his vineyard. He knows his high-altitude desert grapes will have to be resilient. The vineyard sits 5,200 feet above sea level. And he says the cacti and yucca and desert dirt will all be part of the story of the wine.
You really make the experience of the grapevine about being here.
Ricky looks like he belongs here, too. Take his beard, for instance. It's striking. It's long, red like the soil, and it blows back and forth in the wind. Ricky remembers his first time up this hill, and that's all it took. He immediately decided to buy the land.
A lot of what I envisioned and just kind of like the emotion and like the feeling of what I was envisioning was just being outside and sitting in the dirt.
Ricky has taken the first steps to convert the dusty desert into a vineyard. He weed-whacked most of the native plants to make room for grapevines. He dug a ditch and installed a water tank for irrigation. And he did it all on weekends, in his spare time. But here's the thing.
I'd say I'm very confident in what I'm doing, but I definitely know that I don't know what I'm doing.
In his daily life, Ricky is an oil engineer in Houston. So he's learning everything he can about making wine, mostly from
YouTube.
And we're very excited because a little bit later this afternoon, we're actually going to be receiving delivery of all the plants that were grafted up at the nursery.
This is like a college course, you know, basically this is how you put the posts in, and this is how you plant the vines, and this is how you do everything.
You may remember from our last episode.
Ricky did take an actual college course in winemaking too. He reads books, listens to podcasts, he even contacts the people in those YouTube videos. Ricky's actually from California wine country, so maybe a love of wine is in his blood. But he doesn't want to just enjoy wine, he wants to make it. He says it's a little like when he was six and snowboarding caught his eye.
So instead of going snowboarding, I made my own snowboard. And it didn't work.
While Ricky's determined not to repeat that performance, he is aware that he's taking on a serious challenge. He hadn't even closed on the land when he hit his first stumble, water. Ricky dug a 600-foot well before he hit water, and it was only a trickle. He was crushed for a day or two, then he bought a water tank.
Since then, I've realized that nothing is going to work out the way I think it's going to work.
To remind himself, Ricky got a tattoo. It says patience. It's on his thigh, and it faces upward, so he can read it anytime he needs to. Once the vineyard is planted, Ricky will have hundreds of thousands of dollars invested in this project. He doesn't have partners, no financial backers. And every other weekend, he makes the 500-mile trip from Houston to Marfa to chip away at his dream, on his own. But he says he doesn't mind the commute or the long hours of solitude in the desert.
It's actually been pretty nice. It allows me to have my cake and eat it too. I can experience living in a city and experience being out here.
Ricky still has years of work before he'll taste that first bottle of wine. He needs to finish the irrigation system and dig 7,000 holes before April. Then he'll fill them with the Cabernet Sauvignon grapevines. Then he'll learn how to grow the grapes, pick them by hand, and crush them by foot.
And then you wait, and it turns into wine. You know, that's basically it. It just turns into wine by itself magically. It's great.
And if it doesn't work out?
If I get to the end of 10 years and either it didn't work out the way I wanted, or I'm just bored of it, or whatever, and I decide to do something else, I won't feel like I wasted one day of that time doing that. Just being out here is satisfying. Just, you know, just sitting on the ground and looking at the view and listening to the wind is satisfying.
But he imagines probably best enjoyed with a nice bottle of Alta Marfa Cabernet. For the Transom Traveling Workshop, I'm Elizabeth Stewart Severy in Marfa, Texas.
Well, wine in the desert is something that probably sounds pretty satisfying for a lot of people. But back here in Aspen, citizens might not be feeling quite that happy with the city, according to a recent community survey.
Allison Bechtesh reports that overall satisfaction with city services is at its lowest in 10 years.
An annual community survey shows Aspenites are mainly satisfied with their quality of life. But when it comes to rating services provided directly by the city, just over half say they are satisfied. This includes services such as street repairs and city-provided utilities. The combined responses of satisfied with somewhat satisfied was 83%, down nearly 10% from 2007. Only 15% said the job the city does listening to residents is excellent. Outside city services, big concerns for residents include the high cost of healthcare and childcare. 79% say they have adequate housing. The majority of the survey's 294 respondents have lived in Aspen for more than a decade. Allison Bechtesh, Aspen Public Radio News.
Time Magazine's Person of the Year for 2017 is the Me Too movement. The honor goes to the people behind the movement, the silence breakers, men and women who have come forward publicly with allegations of sexual harassment and assault. The movement has even taken root at Colorado's most prestigious workplace, the state capitol.
Three lawmakers face formal complaints from four women alleging sexual harassment. For some, though, coming forward is still too big a risk. Benta Berkland looks at what's at stake when people decide not to come forward.
On the record, we've reported allegations about a representative who suggested sexual acts to a colleague and tried to force her home with him. In another claim, a senator grabbed and slapped an aide's buttocks multiple times when she walked down a hall inside the state capitol. Another allegedly repeatedly leered at an intern, making comments about her clothes and lingered and touched her shoulder.
We can't let this become normalized. We have to realize we're navigating in hazardous waters. There are icebergs out there, and we don't know their depth or their breadth. We need to be very careful about investigating and believing women and affording due process.
That's Jennifer Droback, a law professor at Indiana University and a national expert on sexual harassment. She's been tracking the Me Too movement closely and says accusers now have a new power, their numbers.
We need to fix faulty report procedures and institutions that retaliate against target victims and that enable predators to continue to do this without consequence.
The movement began with allegations of sexual misconduct against Harvey Weinstein, reported in the New York Times and New Yorker. Since then, people have been exposed from all walks of life and all industries. Bree Franklin is the executive director of the Colorado Coalition Against Sexual Assault. She says the media attention has helped some people feel like they can come forward and be believed.
It's continued to have momentum, and where oftentimes we see something happen and it's on people's radars and in the media for a little bit, and then it kind of dies away.
But for those who make allegations, there's a long road ahead.
When we start challenging that norm and saying, well, actually, this isn't okay, and this behavior, which kind of has been happening for so long, is not actually okay, you're really starting to shift culture, and that can be hard.
Just two of the women at the Capitol who have filed complaints were willing to be named, Representative Faith Winter and former lobbyist Holly Terry. They allege Representative Steve Lubsock, a Democrat running for state treasurer, sexually harassed them on separate occasions. Lubsock has denied any wrongdoing and has refused calls to resign. Holly Terry says despite all the media attention she's attracted and social media comments and the reaction from Lubsock, she doesn't regret doing it.
There's a subset of men who objectify women, and they do it over and over and over again to different women. But there are also men who would never do that. I hope the total group can start modeling what the respectful men do.
One woman who works at the Capitol told us, on the condition that she isn't named, the building is a highly political environment that has a lot of pitfalls on reporting these types of things and then trying to work with those folks who may be the perpetrators of some bad things. Yet she's divided. Speaking up could also stop misconduct by someone. It could even get that person some help. Professor Drobak says coming forward may even be more critical when it comes to elected officials.
There is no boss other than the electorate. So you have to have a different kind of system. This confidentiality doesn't work with public office because if voters don't know, they can't deliver consequences.
In the corporate world, someone facing a credible allegation of sexual harassment can be quickly fired or forced out. NPR's top news executive resigned when allegations of sexual harassment became public, and Minnesota Public Radio terminated its contracts with Prairie Home Companion creator Garrison Keillor after allegations of inappropriate behavior. At the legislature, the process is more complex. As Representative Lubsock has refused calls to resign, a fellow Democrat, Representative Matt Gray, is seeking to oust Lubsock from office.
Folks in my district who I hear from do not want that to stop with politicians. They see it happening in the business world, they see it happening in the media world and in journalism, and they absolutely don't think that politicians who engage in the same kind of behavior should be exempt from the kind of consequences that we see in other places.
Gray plans to introduce a bill that would require a two-thirds vote to remove Lubsock. Senators Randy Baumgartner and Jack Tate, both Republicans, also face sexual harassment complaints. Both have denied any wrongdoing. Those coming forward have confirmed to us that they have filed formal complaints. The complaint against Tate comes from a former intern who wishes to remain anonymous, but wanted it known that she was filing a complaint by providing a copy to us. She hopes more people will stand up and complain if they have allegations.
And originally I said that I didn't want to and that that was not something that I would be interested in. But as I let it kind of sit with me for a while, I decided that it was the best way to kind of speak about it.
She says her experience made her feel like she couldn't wear her favorite green skirt or work at the Capitol doing her internship.
And a couple times I would think, like, am I sure? Like, am I absolutely positive? And every time I would think that, I would just be reminded of every comment, like every time he made me feel uncomfortable, and so uncomfortable that I decided to stop doing something that I really enjoyed doing.
After she filed the formal complaint and voiced her allegations, she says she felt the ability to let go. She told us that she's wearing her green skirt again. I'm Benta Berkland at the State Capitol.
You're listening to Mountain Edition from Aspen Public Radio News. I'm Elizabeth Stewart Severy.
And I'm Kristen Kay. And Elizabeth, obviously, if people are listening to Mountain Edition, they want to stay in the know about local news.
Absolutely. And they can also stay on top of what's happening with Aspen Public Radio and throughout the community by liking our Facebook page.
On our Facebook page, you can interact with our station through comments on our posts and by messaging us directly.
Plus, you can check out the pieces for the Aspen-specific Monopoly game. If I were playing, I would obviously call the little gondola.
Check it out by searching Aspen Public Radio on Facebook. This week, service members and veterans will gather in Aspen and Snowmass for Challenge America's first ever military ski week.
The Colorado-based nonprofit has focused events for the week around the concept of the Aspen idea. Events explore how the pillars of mind, body, and spirit connect to military principles. Bronze Star recipient and director of Sierra Club Outdoors, Stacy Bear, will speak about the relationships among nature, values, and duty. That's Thursday evening at the Little Nell. This weekend, there will be a summit to launch the Military Sisterhood Initiative. The program addresses rising rates of suicide among women who've served in the military. And of course, there's skiing.
Challenge America is partnering with Aspen Skiing Company to offer discounted passes to the military community.
Elizabeth, there is a world where an Aspen season ski pass only costs $200.
It exists inside Aspen Monopoly, a new version of the iconic board game that's now available in local stores. Claire Woodcock has more.
In Aspen Monopoly, players can purchase sites like the Aspen Music Festival and School, the Little Nell, and Aspen Mountains, which replace the railroads from the game's original version. The silver playing pieces include a gondola, an aspen leaf, a bear, a hiking boot, and a skier. Philanthropists Dane and Catherine Chapin are part-time residents of Aspen. They own the company USAopoly and the rights to the game from Hasbro. As a result, they've created a number of versions of Monopoly over the years with themes based on pop culture references. Catherine Chapin says partial revenues from purchases will go to the Aspen Community Foundation.
Aspen has been really wonderful to us. It has been very welcoming. We feel very much as if it's our second home.
The Aspen Community Foundation will distribute the game's revenue to a group of local recipients. Claire Woodcock, Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk.
It's back to the drawing board for Basalt's Pan and Fork property. The developer at the table, Lowe Enterprises, says it's out after failing to see eye to eye with the town.
Wyatt Orm reports.
The Pan and Fork parcel is 2.3 acres, smack dab in downtown Basalt. A nonprofit owns it, the Roaring Fork Community Development Corporation, or CDC. Lowe Enterprises wanted to buy the land, and the CDC wanted to sell it to them to the tune of $3 million. But Lowe is walking. Jim DeFrancia, a partner with Lowe Enterprises, says the Basalt Town Council won't allow a project that's, quote, economically feasible.
I never had any indication from the town as to what level of development was acceptable that translated into $3 million for CDC.
Lowe was interested in building a condo-hotel hybrid on the property, and the town council wasn't having it, says Michael McFoy, board president of the CDC. He says the anti-development sentiment that exists on the council makes negotiating development a big challenge. Basalt Mayor Jackie Witsit says Lowe never even submitted a development application, so the town had nothing to officially say yes or no to. Jim DeFrancia agrees.
And why would I when I'm told in advance that the application is not acceptable?
The CDC is ready to move on. The town has even talked about buying the property, even though voters shot down a 2016 bond measure that would have allowed this. Wyatt Orm, Aspen Public Radio News.
We are 3 weeks and 10 inches into the ski season. Here to talk about what that means for our valley is Allison Bechtesh. Hi, Allison.
Hi, Kristen. Yes, a 10-inch base on Aspen Mountain right now. This time last year, we had already experienced 48 inches of natural snowfall. And remember, even that was a late season start for our mountains.
Right. As a resort community, obviously, we rely on people traveling to Aspen and Snowmass to ski. So you've been checking in with the business community here. What are you hearing?
I spoke with Jeff Hanley from the Aspen Skiing Company, the Aspen Chamber and Snowmass Tourism Teams, and Bill Tomsich from the Central Booking Company Stay Aspen Snowmass. I heard over and over this quote, "The snow always comes." I think right now it's a lot of that trying to stay positive attitude out of everyone.
So spirits are still high, but is there data to back that up?
Right. Bill Tomsich told me that they are seeing some lodging cancellations, but those are all last minute. He says this amounts to about a 2% revenue loss for the month of December. There's also some occupancy numbers that look better than last year, actually.
Huh.
Just kind of how the calendar shakes out, more people are staying after the new year into January. He also stressed one good storm could see this trend go the other way, that someone will book last minute to come here, and that we're not actually entirely without skiing.
There's no other ski resort in the state right now that where you can do top-to-bottom laps, you know, of over 3,000 vertical feet like you can on Aspen Mountain right now.
That quote about Aspen being the best place in the state to ski is almost verbatim what Jeff Hanley said as well. So there seems to be this hooking of the elbow, party line sort of thing. The reputation for no snow could be harmful to future bookings. Tomsich was clear they don't lie to anyone who's calling to ask about the conditions. And then there's that question like, well, are they right? Take our friendly rival Vail. They currently have 238 acres open, whereas Aspen Mountain alone has 270. But as we know, our dining and shopping relies on winter visitors. There might be an instance later this winter where all these groups get together and do some sort of promotion to try and get people here.
Are there any bright spots for local businesses?
There are amusing spots, if not bright. The St. Regis, the Hotel Jerome, and the Little Nell are all seeing people take early runs and then go fishing. Fishing is doing just fine right now, month of December in Aspen, Colorado. Backcountry outfitters and snowmobiling companies that have rights to go up high, like behind Laneda where there is snow, those are all doing well. Spas are also seeing an uptick. The other anomaly that's going on right now is Snowmass Village. Rosabella from Snowmass Tourism calls this weekend's celebration of the mountain's 50th anniversary a lifesaver. This same weekend last year, occupancy rates were about 35%. They are 70% this year. That's going to help ease some of these other numbers.
I hope all those people who visit have a good snow dance. All right. Thanks, Allison.
Thank you.
This is Mountain Edition on Aspen Public Radio. I'm Elizabeth Stewart Severy.
And I'm Kristen Kay. In other local news, an effort to give the Colorado River the same legal rights as people ended last week.
For Coloradans who want health insurance to start on January 1st, the deadline to sign up is tomorrow, December 15th.
The Wheeler Opera House will introduce a new board member and a new alternate for the board in January.
And Aspen Words has announced the faculty lineup for the 2018 Summer Words Writers Conference.
Those stories and more news are on our website now. Take a listen at aspenpublicradio.org. Dry weather statewide means many ski areas have limited terrain. Skiers and riders who want more might be looking into backcountry options. Elizabeth, you checked in with avalanche forecasters, so how's it looking in the backcountry right now?
Well, there's not much snow anywhere, and that thin snow cover means mostly low avalanche danger. So the CAIC, that is the Colorado Avalanche Information Center, forecasts generally show safe conditions in all regions across the state. Avalanches happen when one layer of snow slides over another, and right now there's really only one layer of snow, or in some cases there's no snow, like on south-facing slopes.
Right.
But Brian Lazar, who's deputy director of the CAIC, says there are pockets of danger where the wind has blown some fresh-looking snow on top of that weak layer that's closest to the ground.
Right now, the only the places where you could trigger an avalanche are the ones that look most attractive for riding.
And that's because those are the places where there actually is some snow cover, and it's mostly up high in isolated spots.
So have there been avalanches this season?
Yeah, there have been at least three reported slides statewide. Two of those were in the Aspen forecast area. It's been a while. One was in early November up above Marble, and the other was on November 18th, which is right after our last big snowstorm, up Castle Creek near Greg Mace Peak. And all of those incidents so far this season have been following kind of big snowfall.
Okay, so low danger now, except in some isolated pockets.
Mm-hmm.
But what do these conditions mean for avalanche danger later in the season?
Well, Lazar was pretty clear in saying that what we have now is a terrible foundation. Early season snow can become a weak base if it isn't buried in more snow rather quickly. And our combination of early season snow followed by warm weather and then recently these cold nights means that the snow is really weak. It isn't a strong cohesive layer.
But when snow finally arrives, our foundation on the ground right now won't be able to hold much. And so avalanche hazard will spike rather rapidly with our next significant snowstorm.
So the type of early season snow that we've had can mean what avalanche forecasters call a persistent slab avalanche problem.
So persistent, that implies that this could stick around.
Yeah, exactly. Lazar told me that this start to the season could mean a weak layer through the winter and into the spring. There are a couple conditions that could help. They both rely on big snowstorms coming in. So one would be if we get a big storm where we actually do see a lot of avalanches that go all the way down to the ground to dirt. So basically, if it clears out that entire weak layer so we can essentially start over from scratch. The other is if we get a lot of snow that would bury these weak layers really deep. So we're talking like more than 6 feet of snow throughout the terrain. Obviously, both of those scenarios rely on a lot of snowfall, and we don't really have any big storms in the forecast.
Okay, thank you, Elizabeth.
You're welcome.
The Aspen Art Museum will celebrate new exhibitions in each of its galleries tonight. One of the featured artists is German filmmaker Dara Friedman, whose film Mother Drum will be displayed as a triptych on 6-foot-tall screens.
Claire Woodcock met Friedman and the installation crew earlier this week as they prepared for the show's opening.
It's a little bit, just a wee bit wider.
Okay.
Days before the Aspen Art Museum's winter season formally opens, the artists have arrived and are working on their shows in their prospective galleries. Downstairs, filmmaker Dara Friedman and crew are turning Gallery 5 into a movie theater to showcase Mother Drum, a 3-channel film depicting Native American cultures through movement.
There are 3 projections together, so it's a long, low strip, like a landscape. The height is a little over 6 feet,
so that when the figures dance, they're pretty more or less life-size.
The performing body and movement have long been important to the German-born Miami-based artist's work, and Mother Drum is no exception. The film showcases individual dancers, drum circles, and animals, juxtaposed with vibrant monochromatic blocks of color. This is meant to heighten the viewer's experience with the on-screen characters and the connections they're having to nature and spirituality in the moment. Mark Anderson, a creative technologist with Binary Arts in Chicago, is working with Friedman on her installation. He's passionate about using the space to amplify the film's percussive soundtrack.
We have these really amazing subwoofers that we're going to conceal underneath the benches, but they're going to be really loud. It's going to be very bassy, which is fabulous. It's going to be very intense.
He pauses a moment, as if remembering Friedman could decide she wants less bass after all.
She wants more, we can break windows.
What I wanted to do with the work was understand, you know, everybody says ceremony and ritual is so important. I just wanted to know why. Like, what does it feel like? Why is this important? That was sort of one of the challenges with it, was to not just watch or observe, but to feel and understand.
That's how she met Cynthia Jim, a Native American woman from the Swinomish Reservation in Washington. In the film, she dances the jingle dress dance, a Native American woman's powwow, void of any ceremonial events. Friedman describes her ability as a filmmaker to be completely inside a moment, but also being able to watch it from a distance, a trait she sees as foundational to her craft.
This film maybe comes from that thing, that place too, of being completely immersed in an experience and simultaneously being able to watch it.
Director and CEO of the Aspen Art Museum, Heidi Zuckerman, has an affection for film. She says losing oneself in a dark space with visuals and sound can offer an escape from the immediate world around us.
People are trying to figure out what's happening in the world right now and what their place is in it and how we can affect change. And I think that artists are often at the forefront of cultural consciousness and provide sometimes the opportunity for that needed self-reflection to figure out what to do next.
As curator for the museum's winter season, Zuckerman says tonight's opening encourages visitors to be socially conscious.
Particularly in times which are challenging, like those that we're living in, the idea of being in some kind of immersive installation is becoming more and more appealing.
As visitors walk through the galleries of the Aspen Art Museum this season, the hope is these immersive experiences between Friedman's film and Gallery 5 and the exhibits on display throughout the museum will encourage introspection and reflection as it relates to what's happening outside these glass and gridded walls. Claire Woodcock, Ed Lisneason Arts and Culture Desk.
That's all for Mountain Edition this week. I'm Kristen Kay.
And I'm Elizabeth Stewart-Severy. You can find more news from the Roaring Fork Valley and national and international news on our website, aspenpublicradio.org.
Tune into Valley Roundup tomorrow at 3:30. This week, Wyatt Orm talks with local journalists about what's behind the headlines. And hey, it's live, so who knows what will happen.
Thanks for listening. Mountain Edition is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.
Hi, it's Mountain Edition, all the week from the news.